nacionalitet är för Lilek som heter Campus FM. Danua är man bort och program gör aħna hawnhekk. Illum il-ħamis kif iddoqqu t-tokki tal-erba' u nofs dan il-programm qed jerġa' jkun magħkom fuq il-frekwenza 103.7 FM. Programm li qed jitratta l-ugwaljanza. L-ugwaljanza f'kull element tagħha l-ugwaljanza fil-diversità sħiħa tagħha fejn tidħol ix-xogħol fejn nidħlu il-ħbieb tagħna fejn nidħlu l-liġijiet, fejn nidħlu r-realtajiet. U jintaqgħu ma' diversi entitajiet, ma' diversi professjonisti, attivisti, esperti u anke edukaturi, trejdjonistni u nis politikanti, nis li għaddejjin minn esperjenti differenti. Kellna lill-Kris u innow il-żewġ ġenituri li adottaw ġewwa Malta, kellna wkoll il-Kummissjoni għall-Vjolenza Domestika l-ġimgħa l-oħra. Tkellemna dwar istess, kellemna dwar rivelazzjonijiet, però inkomplu iktar insostnu l-konverzazzjonijiet tagħna anke biktar mistiedna. Qabel nintroduċi l-mistiedna tagħna llum, grazzi tal-kumment li għedin taddunna fuq il-paġna tal-Facebook tagħna u anke b'mod personali Eman Burch on Campus FM fuq il-Facebook u hemmhekk intom tkunu tistgħu ssegwu wkoll il-programmi li qegħdin nixxandru minn ġimgħa għal ġimgħa. Illum se naqleb bl-Ingliż, because one of our guests actually today is Nika Levikov, who from the few conversations I had with Nika in the past like half an hour, 15-20 minutes, there's a lot of elements and there's a lot to unpack, and I appreciate that, because there's clearly a lot of work going behind who you are. But firstly, good afternoon and thank you for coming here. I know you're not a new voice to this radio station, but I'm going to let you introduce yourself, because I think that's, I will not do justice for it, so please. Well,
thanks so much for having me, and yes, so hello to everyone who's listening. I'm Nika. I'm part of the Rethink podcast. I'm co-hosting with the editor of Think Magazine, David Mitzi, and I've recently moved to MCAS, the Malta College for Art, Science and Technology, and I'm working there as the hub manager under an EU body that's doing a lot of work on climate change.
So let's, because that's, you know, there's Rethink and then there's the climate change element. That's the first two themes that I'd like to go into. And especially when it comes to climate change, we've been hearing about climate change, you know, quite a lot.
Yes.
I want to say it's a buzzword to a certain extent, you know, climate change there, sustainability. Mm-hmm. Can we just like unpackage, can we just decompress what we're really talking about here when it comes to climate change?
Wow. That's a loaded question, because climate change, there's a lot of things that are involved when it comes to, okay, there's the atmospheric pressures that are happening, there's greenhouse gas emissions, and there's, you know, this global scale level changes to our environment, right? But then on a local scale, the threats look very different depending on where you are. And then the realities of how we can mitigate climate change also are very different depending on where you are. So when we're talking about Malta, and I still have a lot to learn myself on this, in fact, the largest contributor to greenhouse gases here is from transport. So it comes down to cars here. And it's interesting to think that that's the core issue, because then I'm from the States, and when I think about the States, I'm thinking about agriculture, although everyone in America also relies heavily on cars. So that as well is a major issue. So yes, I think that question, you really have to answer it on a more local scale.
Locally, locally, because I know you're part of this EU body. Can you explain that, and then we'll go on to the local reality then? Because I'm appreciating also the fact that climate change is a global issue, but then again, there needs to be quite a lot of local solutions. That's the tagline that I always hear.
Yeah, because you know, you look at things like Paris Agreement, and first of all, just getting the world to sit around a table and agree on the ways to fix this, it's nearly impossible.
Yeah.
And year after year, you have these big expensive conferences where representatives of countries will say, we didn't reach this target. I mean, it's not all doom and gloom. Of course, there is a global effort. But it also comes down to climate change is really hitting poorer nations more significantly than it is the wealthier ones. And the onus really needs to be on the wealthier nations to take the lead in addressing the problems. And so with this new job that I'm at, as I said, I mean, this is on a very local level. So I'm working. It's called Climate Kick, and this is under an EU body called EIT, and this is horrible. I'm on a podcast, and I can't remember what the acronym stands for.
We'll Google that. But in essence, what this means is also that there is a local initiative to promote climate change, to research climate change.
Yes. Local? So it's an interesting setup because EIT is all about entrepreneurship and innovation, but they're also recognizing the fact that, you know, the message is not growth in a world of finite resources. Oh, thank you. The European Institute of Innovation and Technology.
There you go.
yes. You can't have growth. And so EIT is also pushing for a circular economy. And in fact, Malta's also very much moving in the direction of a circular economy and net zero emissions. I mean, that's the dream anyway.
Is it reachable? Is it possible? Not only on a Malta, but is it only like a policy thing, or like from someone who has no idea on how durable
it
is?
Gosh, I really feel put on the spot here.
Sorry.
I mean, I'm not an expert.
Yeah.
And again, I have a lot to learn because this is a new role for me. I would say that it's much easier to develop a policy. It's another thing to implement. I come from a conservation science background, and that's been always kind of the major barrier. We can identify the problems, we can come up with the solutions, but implementation is another story. And I don't know that there is enough wagging of the finger from the EU when Malta doesn't hit its targets.
Yeah.
And there needs to be, I think, more serious consequences to not meeting those targets so that the government can take it more seriously. But something that I hope the hub can do. So again, you have this wide EIT entity, and then you have, stemming from that, you have these knowledge communities, the KICs, which address different themes. So I'm working on the climate change KIC. And locally, that means designing a tailor-made management plan for how we really mitigate climate change for Malta. So what we're hoping that we can do is work with the government to really help them hit these climate targets.
Yeah. I know that also that you mentioned how it's quite ironic that you have supranational conferences, COP, for example, that in themselves they are producing a lot of carbon emission, a lot of carbon footprint,
yes.
You know. And one of the most impactful thing for me was how political it got when it comes to climate change. You know, the Paris Agreement is to hit the 1.5, but the initial was 2%, if I'm not mistaken, and then there was some sort of a negotiation to get the degrees for the you know, to 1.5, and it got very political, basically.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's what my message here is. But the grassroots level work. How important is it for Malta to appreciate it, and also for us not to only talk about it, but to actively do something about it?
Okay. Yeah. Wow. Really, really big, hard questions. But I like these questions. A major problem that I think Malta has is that everyone seems to be working separately on the same initiatives. So there really needs to be this effort to come together and learn how to collaborate. And that's also where I see the hub functioning potentially, is really building these bridges between different entities. And Malta also has an issue with politics really getting in the way of the bigger picture.
Yep.
So, I think you have to repeat your question, though, because...
No, also, like, for me, who's someone who is... I'm a social policy student, you know, I'm working in social policy, but like anyone who's not working directly on climate change is going to be infected, affected
right.
with climate change.
Right.
So how important is it for me and for others to actually appreciate the work that is going to and actually do something about it, you know?
Right.
To really, as you were saying, you know, not work in silos, but collaborate
yes.
with each other and have that seamless synergy in order to achieve what is, in my opinion, the greatest challenge for humankind right now.
I love that you think that's the greatest challenge. I would agree with you. I think that something that a lot of people don't understand is just how catastrophic things are going to get. And in the grander scheme of things, it may not matter. One argument you can make is, well, you know, I'm going to die in 50 years, so, you know, maybe I'll be gone before the real dangers come into play. But at the same time, you are right that we're all being affected by this. It's just that a lot of it is not so tangible.
Yeah.
But also there's a lot of side effects. So, I mean, even if you are driving a car and you're contributing to increased greenhouse gas emissions and you are part of that problem, there's a lot of other problems that are stemming from that, and we're not making those links. So every year in Malta, you have hundreds of people, maybe even thousands, although I personally have not checked the statistics on this, that are dying of pollution-related illnesses.
Yeah, and definitely, I mean, that is on a local level, on a Maltese level, definitely it's one of the most controversies that you know, when it comes to how we generate our electricity, etc.
Uh-huh.
And
uh-huh.
trust me, that is one of the, if not the most, one of the most, you know, pertinent issues. Also, people being asthmatic, etc. You know, these
uh-huh.
are all
yes.
elements that intertwine
yeah.
with what we're talking about. And the one thing that I'm going to be honest with you here,
mm-hmm.
and you know, it seems that we as Maltese, we are happy to let the to a certain extent expats do our work in Malta, and
like the beach cleanup.
It's true, and it's very unfortunate.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I'm not supporting that. Uh-huh. What I'm saying is that then again, we are quite passive in taking action, and through my experience with the National Youth Council of Malta, when we tried to reach out to local youth, there was a lot of passiveness. You know, there was no belly in the fire. But then, you know, there was the Greta Thunberg movement, and suddenly everything erupted for some reason here in Malta
uh-huh.
as well.
Uh-huh.
And I think that is the role of social media, the narrative
yeah.
that social media is feeding us.
Yeah.
That when we saw, you know, the climate march strikes happening around major European city, we as youths, we felt that we need to join that social movement because the social movement was cool. You know, it's not necessarily a proactive movement that we did. It was quite a reactive movement that we did, you know. But now, when we go back to it, and this was what, like 18 months ago, things are back again to the conversation that has died again, especially with local Maltese youth. And when I say local Maltese youth, I mean every person who is between 15 and 30 who lives in Malta,
mm-hmm.
just to clarify that.
Yeah.
But how do we engage with youth to really make a stance on this?
Okay. So I'll also tie this with the grassroots and sort of what we can
yeah.
do. I think use what you know that you have for a start. And you mentioned social media. Facebook is huge for Malta.
yeah.
So take advantage of that,
yeah.
right? The other thing is you have to get them young, as the saying goes. So you have entities like Ecoscola. I don't know if you know about them.
Yep.
And it's really like, get your hands dirty, put your kid in a park, get them to the sea, and get them gardening, like from, I don't know, from the age of two, just as early as possible. And in line with that, there needs to be letting go of this fear of actually touching dirt,
yeah.
because I think that exists, not just here. But this disassociation with nature, I mean, this is an island state, and there are people here who don't know how to swim.
That's true.
And I also, when you think about how little nature there is left here, it's like, how are you not in the sea? Like, that's it's the one thing here that is still relatively intact, and yeah. We don't even know for how long.
Yeah.
So very much about being outside, and also I think there needs to be this, there's two things. I don't believe it's just grassroots. I think joining organizations or just finding ways to connect different entities to be working on initiatives is one thing. But there also needs to be the top down.
Yep.
There needs to be some aggressive policies from government that are both, I think, with some award schemes, like, for example, sell your car, get some money, maybe.
Yep.
But there needs to be, I think, some disincentives as well. Perhaps increasing the taxes significantly for owning a car. The other aspect is, empowering youth, getting them to care. Aside from instilling that care from a young age, so we're talking about generational shifts, and I mean, we really, from the social side, there needs to be an understanding that behavioral changes and attitude shifts take years. And so there needs to be a dedication for this extended period of time. It's not just run an awareness campaign and be done with it.
Yeah.
But I think there needs to be a message from influencers, from public figures, that the way forward is caring for your environment. And what does that look like? I mean, we need to also understand what can be done given the limitations, as in even simple things like wanting to attend a protest, and how do you get to this protest?
Yeah.
Let's say we all have a car, right? But then not everybody does. And the bus system is terrible. So how are they going to get to the protest?
Yeah.
And it's like you really, I think you have to think about these details and really find ways to enable people. And also, it's about generating awareness, right? Because I find that the way that I think and the way I behave is affected very much by the conversations that I'm having and by the literature that I'm reading. So encouraging that as well, just to be more aware.
Yeah, it's quite difficult to get out of the mold, though. So like for me, for example, consciously not using my car, for example, consciously trying to use the public transport, it's quite a difficult thing to get outside of your routine. Because it is part of my routine. You know what I mean? It is the safety of what I've built for myself, which would work. But then again, I am conscious that maybe not on a daily basis, that what I'm doing, as small as it is impacting the whole narrative of what we're talking about here, So these little things of using my car rather than the public transport, or a bike, and I remember the climate emergency march that happened in March 2019, now nearly 2 years. I recall there was quite a substantial. I remember we met here at university at the quadrangle, and a lot of us came with their car, and we didn't realize that until some of us were with their bikes, and we're like, oh well, this is ironic, realize that, we didn't really. As I'm really appreciating you mentioning these little details, that really, so it is. I think it's an amalgamation of both the grassroots activism, but also the policy and the implementation of having a sustainable transport system. And recently I was part of the Malta Sustainability Forum, and we were having this conversation about the role of youths.
Yeah, I attended some of those sessions.
What do you think about these conferences, not necessarily the Malta Sustainability Forum, but having a conference and talking and meeting with different people from different ideas, how important is that to learn different perspectives?
Well, it's extremely important to be exposed to other perspectives, but I think that we need to...
Also, keeping different perspectives at light, but doing something about it? Like, because we've had this conversation in a previous show regarding the balance between, you know, saying something because you truly believe it, but then making an impact, you know, the freedom of expression, and then, you know, it really is, because you mentioned you're from the States. There's a lot of these theories that climate change is a hoax, for example. That is a perspective I would like to understand, not necessarily because I believe it, but because I want to understand where they're coming from.
Absolutely.
What is the educational system? What is the life that they are living that is leading them,
yes,
to a situation where they believe that climate change is not real? We're feeling it every day, you know?
Yes.
I mean,
well, again, a lot of it is not tangible.
Yeah.
So the weather has been changing, and then people say, well, the weather always changes. But the rate, the problem is the rate at which it's changing. This kind of nuance, I think, is really hard to grasp. And I mean, I can use my dad as an example of someone who doesn't believe in climate change. My family immigrated from the former Soviet Union, and a lot of people who are coming from there tend to be very conservative, anti-socialism, and anti-government, and in support of conspiracy theory, because they left basically what was a life of trauma, where, you know, you can't trust your government, and God forbid you say the wrong thing, you're going to get sent to a gulag.
No.
So whatever the government is saying can't be true. And then conspiracy theories seem to make a lot of sense. So climate change is, like, again, it's not something you can see. I mean, they're not for you. Climate refugees exist. Okay. You have people who have lost their homes, but they're very far away. My dad has never met a climate refugee. He never will. So it's for him, it's like, if it's unusually warm in February, well, it's just unusually warm in February.
That's it. I'm very glad you mentioned also climate refugees and how climate change is impacting our mental stress. Is also going to increase instability in families. This is, I think, where the intersectionality and the overlap when it comes to climate change and the way how we are living impacting also the human rights, the equality that is very pertinent in this show, and how they overlap, because there is an overlap, you know. Statistics showing that climate change impacts more women with low income than men, just based on the fact that they don't have enough stability in their life, you know, economically, that may lead to something. And I'm not saying it's a fact. What I'm saying is that there might be these little overlaps that lead for marginalized individuals to be more impacted from climate change than from the status quo of the patriarchy, for example, you know. And this is something that we are not talking enough about it, I feel. I'm quite passionate about that, you know.
Yeah.
And if nothing, there is one message that I'd like to come across this. Yeah.
It's hard to talk about it because it's not a reality that you or myself are facing.
Yeah.
So what can we even say? I think recognizing that it's happening is a very important thing. But beyond that, and should you be doing something?
Yeah.
I mean, should you leave your life here in Malta and go to an island in the Indo-Pacific and...
and that's it, you know. I saw this documentary about the Paris Agreement came, and it really influenced me, you know. And and you know, you want to do something, but sometimes how do we do that something?
Yes.
I think social media is
yeah.
I go back to social media because that's the most free tool that we use on a day-to-day basis, us here in here in Malta. You know, we're talking about climate change a lot, and what I'm appreciating about this conversation is how to a certain extent it we need to have these conversations, but we also need to actively do something about them. And I know that one of the most difficult ways how to do so is the communication we use, the language that we use.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we sometimes use very bombastic language, words or phrases, you know, that, you know, the general population is not necessarily going to understand. And I think that's one of the key issues here when we're talking about not necessarily climate change only, like mm-hmm. any other policy, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. as a social policy person, you know, we tend to be very top surface with the words that we use. But in reality, we need to really communicate the language that the people speak.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope at least that this is the example that you gave with your father and Chet, and, you know, climate refugees. I hope that resonates also with our audience in a sense that this is a reality.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, I'm going to put you again on the spot, but when it comes to the public transport, because again, we mentioned the cars in Malta,
yes.
we're quite dependent on the cars,
yes.
but how do we, I'm not expecting that we find a solution in this program, but you know, we are dependent on the cars because there is no infrastructure when it comes to, you know, it's a double-edged sword.
Tell me about it. I use the bus and I've got my bike fixed now, so fingers crossed I actually get myself on my bike as well.
I'll give you a call.
It's okay. So I've had a lot of discussions about this, also because at MCAST, it's not just the Climate Kick Hub, but also there's the Urban Mobility Hub as well.
Okay.
And so as you can imagine, we are also hoping to address this problem of how do we get around this island. There are so many things that can be done. And this is part of the frustration for me, that you have initiatives to build new roads and flyovers, but this is not the solution. Yeah. There's also a push for electric cars. Now, I'm not going to say that's bad, but electric cars are not the solution. The solution is less cars. But as you said, you don't have infrastructure for other things. So what do we need? We need to start pedestrianizing roads. We need to stop worshipping cars. We need to build more cycle lanes. We need to provide free like workshops and training sessions on how to ride a bike that's subsidized by the government. We need to have campaigns that are just encouraging people to walk, because this idea of walking half a kilometer is like, that's too far. And the thing is, it's also very dangerous to walk here.
Yeah.
And how many times have I had to walk on a road because there's no pavement?
Yeah.
So there needs to be also nationwide effort to put in pavements. And again, if you are pedestrianizing roads, if you're putting in pavements and cycle lanes, you need to also then, for the car drivers, because let's face it, we're not going to get rid of cars, you need to be rerouting and giving people very clear alternatives to how they can get from point A to point B with their cars, so that all of these things need to be happening simultaneously.
Yeah.
And that's where I think that's the issue. It's not that they can't be done individually. It's the effort to do all of these things together.
In fact, I was, I'm totally on board with this. You know, I mean, I was not expecting a solution, but there you go. We have a number of initiatives and solutions that can happen, you know, in a span of 2 minutes. So you know, and there need. I mean, I always say when there's political will, there's a way, and you know, things happen in Malta when there's political will, and unfortunately, and there's not enough of it when it comes to this. Ironically enough, Malta did vote for a climate state of emergency, but then it's a questionable, and I leave that to the audience.
Well, that's news to me.
It is. I was involved in that actually in November 2019. There was a motion in Parliament, which was a bipartisan motion that was lobbied back then by the National Youth Council, when a motion was set for Malta to announce a state of climate emergency. But that's just on paper, and I was involved in it, and I am very disappointed that just on paper, because that means something, you know. We can talk about air shoot day, and when we use all the resources for the air, and that is air, you know, get it moving backwards every year, you know. So there is that on a policy level,
yes.
quote unquote. But
yeah,
then again,
yeah.
the will, and that's why I mentioned the will, is a completely different thing.
I mean, the strategies are there, the plans are there. You know, hundreds of pages of documents that are outline what the situation is and what to do. But as you said, there needs to be the will. And unfortunately, I think, and I'm saying controversial things, but the government has its own agenda. What's actually best for the people is another story.
That's not controversial. It is the fact for to me. So we're on the same page here. But you know what? We're going to go to Harry Styles and his song Adore You. He's adoring a fish. The music video is amazing. Maybe there's a message we should understand from that as well. Kenneth, Harry Styles, Adore You, il-muzika unik fu Campus FM fu aħna għawn, jina għaman l-lum għanna il-nika Levikov għamilna l-lower part tal-program nitkellmu wkoll fu il-klima u t-tibdil tal-klima ġewwa Malta. Nika, our conversation was, you know, we had a very rich conversation, one with a lot of challenges, a lot of solutions in the meantime as well, yeah. What we can do, what our reality is in Malta. And what I appreciated you said in the beginning was, listen, it is a global challenge, but at the end of the day, we as Malta, we need to take a local aspect. And you gave us a number of suggestions, which which I know they're there, you know, there's the policies, you know, I read a parliamentary question saying that the national cycling plan was consulted in January 2019, and as of January 2021 it wasn't still presented as a plan, you know, the national cycling plan. So you know, it kind of ties down to what we were saying, that where there's political will, there's a way. And I think I know there's a number of policymakers and you know, listening to this, you know, we're talking to you, and we really want to have this conversation not only happening, because it's happening, but also implemented. And something that I appreciate also, and changing a little bit the subject, is how there's a number of initiatives here at university, research based initiatives, which are being implemented, and the way how one shares the stories is by this magazine Rethink. Can you tell us a little bit about this, you know, what it is, how does it work, and also link it with I know there's a podcast related to it, so just let us know also for the others.
Yeah, so, well, my co-host on the Rethink podcast, David, I feel like should be here to be talking about Think Magazine. But yes, this magazine is amazing. It's really about communicating to a wide audience. So it's not just engaging with people in Malta, but it's actually putting the University of Malta on the international map and showing what this university is doing. And it covers all kinds of research that is happening. Each magazine has a theme. So there's an effort to sort of find research that is associated with the theme for that issue. There's interviews as well, and also just some... I mean, there's a range of things, but again, essentially focus on communicating the research. And then the podcast is another form of getting that information out there.
Yeah, it's another tool to get across that communication. And you know, what I appreciated is also that you are trying to, is it focused on any research, or is there a particular, or you mentioned the team, but are the team in some sort of a particular field, or anything that's happening at university?
So it's really addressing everything that's happening, but of course then you are going to prioritize the research that fits the theme for the given issue.
Okay, fair enough. So, you know, it's that's also brilliant, because you're not like closing the door on one, you know, area, but
I mean, typically in each magazine you will get something from the humanities, you'll get something from the sciences, you'll get something from engineering, so there's a lot of different things that are covered.
Yeah, that's an interdisciplinary approach also when it comes to the theme particularly, and so I don't read it, but now I'm going to be honest with you, I'll read it.
Oh, you absolutely should read it. It's a great publication.
I know Edward gave me a copy, and I actually read that, to be honest, because we had Edward Duca, who's the editor-in-chief, who did give me a copy. But it's published every month, is it?
No, it comes out quarterly.
Quarterly, so, okay, yeah. Fair enough. So you know, one of the most elements that I appreciate in this, that we're talking about climate change, and we're talking also about research, we have this, you know, perception that it's quite, I'm going to use a very strong word, it's an elitist thing, you know, it's people who are in their rooms with a lot of books behind them, you know, and, you know, there's this kind of perception, or at least I was brought up in that perception that, you know, not everyone can do it, but is it true? Is it just something that, you know, we can understand it, no?
Of course. And I think also, I mean, for all my criticisms of the internet and the digital age, what the internet has given us is sort of an opportunity to shatter that image. I actually did some research on vulnerable youth in Cotonera, and I was talking with the youth in a focus group. Like, what comes to mind when you think of a scientist? What comes to mind when you think of science? And they were talking about... one person brought up conservation as an issue, and that made me really happy, because I'm very passionate about conservation. But they were also just describing scientists outside of that stereotypical white male in a lab coat. Even though you might imagine that, again, you know, people are just kind of, who aren't in STEM, have this outlook. It's really changing now, I think.
I appreciate you mentioning STEM. So let's just delve into what STEM is, and just, like, you know, give a bit of an explanation on on why we're talking about it. Like, what is STEM? And then I'll have some follow-up questions on that.
Okay. So when we're talking about STEM, we're talking about science, engineering, technology, and maths. But for science, STEM is specifically addressing what is an outdated term now, hard science, meaning biology, physics, chemistry. I don't like that personally because I actually moved into the social sciences when I came to Malta. And when it comes to rigor and setting up an experiment and going through the process of a scientific method, developing a research question, you do this in psychology, you do this in sociology.
That's
true. So to kind of look at those more as something in the humanities, I find very absurd in a way.
Yeah, and I'm appreciating that you're saying that. I mean, I never thought of that perspective, but then again, it is true. So, you know, maybe we should, maybe there should be a conversation on trying to change the meaning behind it. But, you know, we talk about sciences, and then I know there's a number of, I know I'm going to mention big names here, but I know that Michelle Obama did a program. I know that Oprah Winfrey did a program, you know, encouraging young women to join STEM subjects.
Uh-huh.
You know? So on an international level, there's always this perception that STEM is, as you mentioned, the middle-aged white man, the patriarchy of society that is in science and maybe not much visibility to women of color, woman of whatever sexual orientation, whatever it is. But as a woman, and also like you working in these fields, is it something that you felt that you had to fight for your position? Was it something that you were encouraged to do? What is your story with this?
Well, I have to say, again, this is where something I could easily criticize. I have a lot of criticisms about the United States, and I've actively chosen not to live there for nearly 10 years now. However, I never felt limited by the fact that I was a woman.
Yep.
I, you know, up at a certain age, I was able to go out at night by myself and feel safe. Education was mandatory. I was expected to go to university. Now, I would say also that you shouldn't force your child to go to university, but it was like, you need an education. That was valued. And when I had said to my parents, I'm going to study biology, it was just like, fantastic, go do that.
Yeah.
I think for them, it was just, they wanted to see me at university, and whatever I chose to study was my choice. There was never this like, are you sure you want to go into science? In fact, my dad was always quite good with physics and maths, which are my two worst subjects. and he would get very angry that I didn't understand.
Yeah.
And I really struggled with it in school. But and that anger is also saying, you should understand this. And not like a, you're a girl.
Yeah.
It's not for you.
Yeah,
like a, you should know this subject.
You should understand. It also means, you know, these are things that, I mean, I remember we had this conversation. We always criticize how we learn certain subjects, you know, when we think about, as I mentioned, you know, about science. So I'm appreciating that your experience is also that you were encouraged to go into it, but you were also encouraged that to continue your education was maybe the one thing that you were the most encouraged to do, which is unfortunate that there's a number of young women, young girls, you know, that they do not continue their education, you know, and I mentioned this because, and this is a personal story, but it's also a real story, is that when we say, I believe that Maltese youth, we're in a bubble. And we're in a bubble where we don't realize that a few hundred kilometers away, there are youths my age, younger than me, age of 12, they don't continue their education, you know, and that is some of the most main challenges that also the United Nations and Sustainable Development Goals, you know, quality education, SDG4, you know. There's also that message that everyone should at least have a basic knowledge of education. And we don't appreciate what we have as as youths in Malta, you know, mm-hmm. this education. And to link it with another topic, but I'm going to shift a little bit the topic, is also we don't appreciate the advances that we had regarding the LGBT uh-huh. and the equality in Malta. And it's very unfortunate because, you know, these are very fresh laws.
Yes.
I never liked the phrase they gave us something because it's rightfully ours, but you know, they are implemented. And I don't, we're appreciating this. And I'd like also your viewpoint on this, this equality, legal progress, when it comes to LGBT laws in Malta as an expert. And I don't say this as an offense. I'm saying this is from a different, childhood and a different background and a different, you know, education.
Mm-hmm.
What do you make of this? What's your perception? How do you view it? Because the way I view things is completely going to be different from the way you view things. I'd like to learn. I'd like to open this Pandora's box.
I think it's hard for me to really have a take on it, in the sense that I know the government likes to promote itself as like a very gay-friendly country, and I see that from a cynical point of view, that this is about boosting tourism.
Yeah.
And I would say that does homophobia exist here? Absolutely. And on the other hand, is it safe to be openly gay here? I think it depends where you are.
Mm.
I think in a lot of places it is, but also safe. And what do you mean by that? Safe as in you're not going to get physically beat up? Okay.
That's a good point. Yep.
Safe as in you aren't going to get stared at or aren't going to get judged? That's something else.
Yeah.
And you will probably. And as someone who has only in the last, you know, few years started openly identifying as bisexual, I haven't had a lot of experiences where I was publicly with someone of the same sex. And because it's sort of new for me, I am scared in a way to be open, but I also feel like I need to put my foot down and be open. Yeah. So I actually consciously force myself to not look at the surrounding environment.
Yeah.
Because I don't think I would be able to handle feeling that judgment. So if I'm with someone of the same sex, I filter out the people around me.
Yeah, you know what? I'm very appreciative of you sharing this with me and with us, because, you know, we all have our struggles. You know, when I came out, I was 17, and you know, I'm from Gozo. You know, my story is well known nowadays. I was quite a religious person. I'm quite still a spiritual person. You know, and it was a struggle between my spirituality and my sexuality, and you know, setting down your foot. You know, really just standing and just really saying this, like, this is who I am, and I'm not just gonna, and you know, the blocking on what's around. You know, sometimes we need that. Sometimes we need to just really be in our zone. And as much as we are part of a society, and we need to assert what our society is around us is saying, I also say we are part of a society. So we are part of it. So I don't feel that I need to do anything else than just be me. And so I really do thank you for sharing that, because it is, at the end of the day, I think it's one of the most troublesome thoughts that I have, is how there is quite a lot of national rise when it comes to nationalism and the populist movements across mainland Europe that are, you know, Poland, Hungary. You know, you start filtering it from the east to the west, and without offense to the blocks, but it is what the reality is at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And I know friends of mine who live in Czech Republic, they're like, brilliant place, Prague, but I can't live here. You know, I cannot build a family here.
Right.
Here. Or whatever city it is, you know, and you wonder how much we have the responsibility to be honest with ourselves, but also to make something out of it. And I say this in a context of this program of the message that at least we're trying to communicate, is how we have also the responsibility to listen and.
Mm-hmm.
Come to that, you know, to listen. I mean, it's, I guess what I'm trying to convey here is also how difficult it is for someone to be himself and be comfortable with himself, but also not let that identity define them. Because, you know, I started this program knowing that you have different identities and I have different identities. I wanted to talk about the different identities apart from the sexual orientation. Uh-huh. And that's the main message that we always promote here, that we are different human beings with different identities, and one identity doesn't define who we are. We are like whole humans. I hope
I had a very similar conversation with David, in fact, when we did our podcast, because there's many ways that you can identify yourself.
Yeah.
And you are, the whole of you is a mixture, but also different parts of you can flourish or be expressed more yeah. during different periods of your life. And in any case, you're always changing. So I agree with you as well that you don't want to get lost in this one yeah. primary identity.
You know what? You just said in 10 seconds what I've been trying babbling about in 2 minutes. So thank you about that. You know, but also to come to a conclusion on this wonderful conversation that we're having, but unfortunately time is what it is, you know. In the old, you know, within the intersectionality of humans, what is your message to, I'm going to say youth, because that's the most prominent audience that we have, but what is the message to all our listeners, you know, to reach out, not necessarily on sexual orientation only, but to the human himself, to the identity, you know? From your experience, what message would you send to who's listening to us?
Wow. Well, I would say reflect.
Yeah.
Try and take some time, if not every day, even a few times a week, to reflect on what you're doing with your life, reflect on what you did that day.
Yeah, I think there's nothing else to add with that. You know, reflect and listen and really communicate with others. Before we leave, how can people access Rethink, and how can people access also the climate cake?
Okay, so Rethink is available on Podbean, but you can also subscribe to it on other podcast apps. For example, I'm using Podcast Addict, I think it's called, and I listen to it on there. As far as Climate Kit goes, we are currently based in the library of the MCAST Paola campus, as the new research building is still being built. So come please visit me in the library, say hello. And thank you so much for inviting me here.
It was a pleasure, you know. And of course, we'll share all the details on our Facebook page. I'm on board with Compass FM. You know, that's, I think we're dumping a lot of information there, but it's also a very central place for our audience to just follow what our guests are having. You know, it was a pleasure having this conversation with you. I hope we'll get the opportunity, you know, off mic and on mic, like, to continue this conversation.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because, you know, these are the conversations that are really, really rich and then really inspiring me to keep doing this, what we're doing. So thank you so much, Nika, for joining us today.
Thank you.
Eko, da kien il-program flimkien ma' Nika Lavikov. Jena, qabel nikkonkludu l-program, irin ringrazzjakom ukoll tal-messaġġi li qegħdin ittuna ta' kull ġimgħa fuq il-program Emma Borg on Campus FM fuq il-paġna tagħna tal-Facebook. Hemmhekk wieħed jista' ikoll jidħol u jsegwi l-programmi kollha ta' kull ġimgħa anke fuq il-paġna tal-Facebook Campus FM u fuq il-website. Il-programm se jerġa' jiġi tut innar is-sibt li ġej fl-10 ta' filgħodu frekwenza 103.7 FM u jien se nerġa' nkun magħkom bi programm ieħor interessanti b'diskussjoni oħra interessanti bħallum ġimgħa hekk kif dejjem idoqqu it-tokki tal-erba' nofs fuq 103.7. Isselmilkom.